Okie dokie, very welcome back to the 9 till noon show for this Friday morning, the 24th of February. Thank you for choosing us today. Stay with us, as I said, just before the news here. We've a lot of different interesting stuff coming up, so I don't want you to miss out. Good morning, Greg. When we have a government and opposition who actively take part in protests against their own people, that shows we need an independent government, a government for Ireland, not Europe. Enemies of the state calling people far right. If we don't stand up now, our children will be paying for it. Now, I presume what you're talking about is the, in fairness, very well-attended protest in Dublin last week. But you see, there are different views. I mean, you could argue that the government and opposition were standing with the people that disagree with you. Now, I suppose if you have different views, you feel that they're not representing you, and I get that. Lots of supporters expressing their glee on social media. Read the incident in Omagh. Politicians say one thing, rank and file another. It's disgusting. I haven't seen much of that, thankfully. I haven't been exposed to it, if the truth be told. Another, there are not too many politicians or leaders that tell the truth, believes one listener. Good morning, Greg. Just to put Pat straight, Putin said he wouldn't use nukes first. Why don't you talk about the act of war America committed against its ally Germany instead of cheap gas from Nord Stream? America is selling it now at 46 times the price. Where are our politicians on this? And I presume what you're doing there is referencing the comments from Mr. Wallace and Ms. Daly, who they are quoting a journalist who's claiming that it was in fact America that blew up that pipeline. But that's, again, one person's point of view, and they've amplified it in the EU. I'm not saying it's true or not, but it's one journalist's point of view that you know, finally a journalist people trust, okay? What kind of mentality have your panel got when they think we should increase and give more finance to our army when one small nuclear warhead would wipe out our entire country? I'm not sure any of them advocated for increasing finance to the army. I think what they were saying is that it's an inevitability, that that's what we are going to have to do. They certainly, as far as I could read, weren't endorsing it. They were just saying that this is probably where we're going to end up. Another caller says there are groups been highlighting the need for improvements within our defence forces for years. It's been falling on deaf ears. And now look at where we are with numbers less than 8,000 when we should have a strength of 10,000. OK, thank you. Where were we ever neutral? Irish Defence Forces have been involved in NATO missions in the past, peace enforcement missions as well as peacekeeping. Yes, I get you. I understand what you're coming from, but this is next level stuff. I think we have to admit that if we have the Irish Army training the Ukrainian Army to fight the Russian Army, it's that to me is that to me goes beyond peacekeeping missions. And that's why it's worthy of speaking again. NATO good, Putin bad. Any chance of balanced view here? Well, you got it. So any chance of balanced ears? I thought that we had quite a balanced conversation there about who's right, who's wrong, and the motivations for this war and the West might be having theirs. I actually thought you got a reasonably balanced conversation in the first hour there. Russia never attacked anyone till NATO came to its borders. I get that too, but the reality is that Russia is looking to bring its borders closer to NATO borders as well, because if they get Ukraine, they're getting closer and closer to NATO. Do you know what I mean? So you could argue that that seems a little bit of a flawed argument, but look, a lot was going on long before that happened. There's a bad oil spill, by the way, in Creasla heading into Dunfanaghy. Drive with care, advises a fellow motorist there. Okay, so be careful out in the roads there. Let me see. In one hand, we're condemning the Russians, and rightfully so. And on the other hand, we're sending millions to countries that condone their actions. This is one really confused world. Someone's been taken for a joke. And that's why I think really everything that's going on, and I believe the superpowers are involved in this, is to redraw the world, the boundaries, the financial powers, whatever it might be. Because as I say, China, very much interested in what's happening in Eastern Europe. North Korea, I'm sure. There's lots of little wars that have popped up in a number of different countries around the world as well. This instability has caused that. They're not very much reported, but it's happening. The world is in a difficult place at the moment. There's always hope, by the way. I'm not being overly negative, but you just wonder sometimes where that might come from at this point. Good morning, good morning, Greg. A quick question for your panel today. Basically, the United Nations have managed eventually to take a vote and unequivocally condemn the Russian actions in Ukraine and call for their immediate withdrawal. However, certain nations either abstained from the vote or even actually voted against it. Amongst them was Pakistan, South Africa, both of which are other governments send foreign aid to in the millions. The UK government. And did any other government in Europe also send foreign aid to these countries that either voted with Russia or refused to vote against them? My question is, why does the situation even exist when we're talking about homeless people on our streets and struggling to put roofs over people's heads in areas with mica and pyrite? You see, we can't, though. I get where you're coming from, and I'm not sure if we're, you know, what is the right thing or what's the wrong thing. And I hope in this whole conversation here, I'm learning all the time and changing my views or forming my views. The bottom line is though, we can't be insular and just think that we pull up the drawbridge, we are completely on our own, we don't get involved in everything, and we'll be okay. The bottom line is we are very much intertwined with the United States as it relates to foreign direct investment here, which gives us the money. Now, we could argue about how it's spent or not all day. We are heavily reliant on Europe as well. How we might function on our own remains to be seen. But if we were to completely isolate ourselves, are you confident that the defective concrete blocks homes would be rebuilt? Are you confident that we'd have the resources to solve the problem of homelessness? We are a very small country, 5 million people. We're a very rich country. There is no reason why we should have hundreds of thousands of people living in poverty, why we should have so many people homeless. You know, and we know it's not just about providing homes, don't we? We know there has to be more supports for a lot of people as well to ensure they have the best outcomes. It shouldn't be beyond us. We are a country. And when I say this, of course, I'm on about in terms of governance. We're a 32-county country with a population greater than 5 million. I hope you understand. I recognise that. But I'm talking about the country that the Republic of Ireland and the government that has control of that, around about 5 million plus, you know, the size of Manchester or something. Like, I know it's an often, we often say that, but with the right policies and the right decisions and the right balancing of wealth, you know, I'm not saying robbing Peter to pay Paul. We should live in a country where everyone lives really quite comfortably and in a house. We should be, but we're not. And who's to say if there were any changes in power that might change? I don't know. But what do you think? 086 60 25,000. I'm only sort of putting out the proposition there. Well done to the students at Stramore National School in Glendone on being the All-Ireland VEX IQ Robotics competition, being in it in Cork. That's from All in Church Hill. Greg, is it possible to get an appropriate person to explain the number of traffic crossings to be on the centre barrier being erected from the postal to the Dry Arch roundabout? Yep, indeed. We'll try and get to the bottom of that for you. 086 60 25,000, your WhatsApps and texts to that number, or give us a call on 074 91 25,000. Right, we're joined in studio by Paddy Rooney, PRO of the Friends of Letterkenny University Hospital. Great to have you back on the show, Paddy. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
And also Connor Dorian. Dorian, I beg your pardon. Dorian.
Yeah, Dorian.
I think I'm thinking Back to the Future or something. Yeah. I know an awful lot of Dorians as well. Connor, great to have you in with us.
Thanks, Paddy.
Well. Shall we start with you, Connor? What is your medical story, Connor?
So in 2013, I was diagnosed with an inoperable brain tumour. So I went straight down to Bowman Hospital in Dublin, where I got chemotherapy from September to December, and then radiotherapy from all of January. And after that there, I was clear for 3 years, but then I came back far more aggressive. Within 3 days, I went from walking, crutches, wheelchair to in bed. I couldn't remove my right side of my body at all, any of it. So they got more chemotherapy, but they couldn't give me any more radiation because they gave me too much the first time, and they said my brain would be mush if they give me any more. So I got a stem cell transplant instead, which just absolutely destroyed me. I was really sick, and there's like my mom had to go through like 5 or 6 doors to get to me because it was that bad of a case.
So, did you at that point, you know, going through all of that, did you ever think you were going to get back to the where you're at now, that you're able to walk in here and sit and recount that part of your life?
Like one of the big things that happened as well. Friends of Letterkenny really helped me when I had radiation in St. Luke's. They brought me up down to Dublin every Monday and back up to Donegal every Friday. And that was like a big, that helped me so much, so it did.
Yeah, because with everything else going on, that's one problem solved, isn't it?
Exactly.
You know, it allows focus in other areas.
Yeah, and they had a bus, and they had a load of people from Letterkenny going in the bus the whole way down to Dublin, and we all talked about like how good of a service this was. They're just very good, and that's why I decided to do this marathon. And so was me and my friends, Charlie Gallen, and Connor Gallen, and Gareth Cody. They're always with me during my treatment. So we all decided to do a marathon together, and we decided to do it for a charity, and this is the charity I chose, Friends of Letterkenny.
Connor, could you not have done a 5K?
I've done a 5K too, yes.
What about another one?
I've done a half marathon there last week, and I'm nearly broke from it, so I'll be in bits after the marathon.
And when is your target for the marathon? What date's it on?
On 19th of March in Rome.
Right, so you're constantly, I mean, obviously, because you've done the half marathon, to some extent, I presume that's part almost like training for the full marathon.
It is. That's one of the reasons why I've done it. I wanted to see if I could actually do the half marathon first before I got on to bigger things.
And there's still a wall with the half marathon, I presume.
Yeah, there is. Yeah, so after the half marathon, I've got patellitis from basketball, so I have to be careful with my knees now.
Okay.
So.
And who are you running the marathon with, did you mention?
My friends, Gareth Cody, Charlie Boyle, and Connor Gallen. They were a great support to me when I was sick.
Okay.
They always see me. They see me in hospital. They see me when I went home to Donegal. So they're great group of lads.
They never gave up on you.
They never gave up to me. And then poor David Cuddlove, God love him. Hey, we tried to get him to do it, but he wouldn't do it. He's a bit lazy. But no, fair enough. He's got a bad knee, so he's got a worse knees than me. So
well, I was going to say, you've got bad knees and quite a medical history in your doing. Don't apologise for giving him a touch.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
I got a contact with Peter Cuddlove, David's dad. I actually knew him before I knew him. And then when I rang Friends of Letterkenny and he answered the phone, I was like, Peter? I couldn't believe I actually knew the chairman of Friends of Letterkenny. So that was a great help too. So he kind of included me a bit more into the whole process of it.
Brilliant. We'll come back to you. Paddy Rooney, as I mentioned, it's an amazing story from Connor there. And I think it's just there's something about it, isn't it? That, you know, it's Connor's journey, that word, but you know what I mean. But also that his interactions with the Friends of Letterkenny University Hospital were so important to him that now, thankfully, he's able to do what he's doing something for charity, and he's thinking on you guys too. I mean, and that's, there's a beautiful story there.
Yeah, it's lovely to hear his personal testimony from two points of view. First of all, is the role that the Friends of the hospital played in his journey. I mean, Connor and I spoke before. It was a very challenging period in his time. There's no two ways about it. So at least the bus he had transport from the front door of the hospital to the front door of St. Luke's Hospital in Dublin. And it brought a small bit of comfort in a very uncomfortable period of time for him. And it's nice to hear as well that he's made a full recovery.
Yeah,
as well.
Talk to us again. I think there's no harm ever in reminding people the work of the Friends of Letterkenny University Hospital, because the title in and of itself doesn't tell the whole story.
Well, we celebrated our 30th anniversary last year, and in that time, believe it or not, there's been in excess of €7 million put into services and departments within the hospital. And that's a quantitative figure, Greg, and quite often, you know, it's very hard to know from a qualitative point of view, what does that mean? But I think it was well put one time when one of the consultant radiologists, Dr. Conal McAward, when he was speaking at one of our functions, and he said that the Friends, there's a lot of intended consequences, you know, buying the equipment and buying the bus and so on and so forth. But there was a lot of positive unintended consequences as well. And he made reference when the Minister of Health at the time, Mary Harney, set up the National Cancer Control Programme. Letterkenny was in a very good position to bid for services and actually to receive them, because a lot of the gadgets that needed, particularly around diagnostics, you know, heavy artillery stuff like CT scanners and MRI scanners and all that, the hospital already had them because the Friends had bought them. The hospital was going to get it sometime, but they wouldn't get it as quick. So this is not lessening the role of the DACC now in getting stuff, because they had to do all the heavy lifting in it. But the Friends was able to iron out the crinkles in the runway. Mm. So it was a lot cheaper, for instance, for Letterkenny to get some of the services, particularly the symptomatic services. And the other point that he made as well, which is often lost in this, is that it's no secret, Greg, that a lot of hospitals around the country, particularly outside of the Dublin hospitals, find it difficult to recruit consultants in some specialties, right? Not all, some. And, you know, prospective candidates will come and they'll have a look at the hospital to see what's in it, and if they like what they see, they'll bid for it, and if they don't. So can you imagine now, for instance, Letterkenny University Hospital sometime in the future will be in the market for a consultant cardiologist, and the general manager will be able to show candidates around, and you know what, he's got a spanking brand new cardiac cath unit or department within the hospital. There's only two in the whole Saltire region. Galway University Hospital is one and Letterkenny is the other. Now, surely that's going to be a nice carrot and inducement for some consultant to look forward to working in Letterkenny.
So is it a case that really maybe sometimes that we live in the moment and very reactionary to what's now, but to some extent in the background, you have to be playing the long game. You have to try and ensure that when you're trying to get a door pushed open, that it's ajar at the very least.
Absolutely, yeah. There's no two ways about it, because there's another unintended consequences that came out of the Friends as well, and that's about the lobbying role that goes on behind the scenes that you never really, it's never really out to the front. There's two good examples of that, I suppose. One is the Noel O'Connell, who was a very active chair of the Friends for a long period of time. Noel was very well switched on. He knew what buttons to push and he knew the political landscape and where to go. And, I mean, he was instrumental himself and the directors of the Friends at the time in getting the mental health unit refurbished in the hospital, because the Friends put up 30% of the refurb costs. He actually met the junior minister of health at the time, John Moroney. I don't think that anybody would know that. There was a lot of pushing and pulling on Noel's and the Friends' behalf to get that done. And you're very, very familiar, of course, with our story last year with the cardiac cath unit. Your goods program yourself was very helpful. We would like to think that we were involved in getting that to stay opened, or to be opened, actually.
100%. Yeah, of course. I think we all have to work together.
Sure.
Really, yeah. Don't we?
Yeah.
Either formally or informally.
Yeah, yeah.
But we're all pulling in the one direction. And that includes with the management at Letterkenny University Hospital.
Sure.
We're all on the same one side of it.
Yeah.
Anyway, Connor is good, isn't he, Paddy?
Yes,
he
knows.
I got half of it.
All right.
But just enough to get exactly what you're talking about, because there is such a technical element to it. Paddy, Connor, just back to you. I think you mentioned in passing, because you went through your story like that there, because it's like,
you have a fast speaker, sorry.
No, it's not in how you speak. I'm a fast talker myself. It's just really quite matter of fact in that, I did this happened, that happened, that happened. But I mean, you're running marathons now. You talked about how sick you were. You were paralysed for a period of time as well. I mean, this is just a remarkable personal story for you, Connor, that I just want to recognise again.
Yeah, well, this is like one of my biggest achievements. If I did this half marathon, or if the full marathon, sorry, like that'll be a big achievement, because I used to be very sporty before I got sick. I played basketball, I'd done everything. Like, and after I haven't done anything at all, this is like the first time I'm actually doing something. I'm looking forward to, I hope I actually do it. I will do it if I have to roll over the line or something. Yeah, I'll do it.
I've no doubt you will do it. And how can people support you and in turn support the Friends of Letterkenny University Hospital?
Well, I've set up a GoFundMe page, so whatever's earned there, it doesn't go to me then to them, it goes straight to them. So it does, so that's one of the benefits of using GoFundMe page. So it's just, I'm trying to raise 10,000, so I've got my 170-year-old office. So I'm nearly there. So I am.
Well, if we are not over the 10K by the end of this interview, I'd be wondering if we just talk to ourselves. So, what do people search in GoFundMe?
If you just type in Letterkenny, Friends Letterkenny, and GoFundMe, it should come up, or even
Brilliant.
My Facebook page, Connor Dorian.
So hopefully, maybe the listeners could get you past the 10K and well beyond it through the course of this interview. You're really close, aren't you?
Oh, very close.
And there's something really special, I think. And sometimes we have to think about things, or I do at least, in that you've gone through your experience, right, and you've availed of this service and it meant so much to you. This money that you're raising and the people being generous in doing so genuinely helps other people just like you into the future.
Exactly. That's what it's all about.
And it has a real impact, doesn't it, Paddy? I mean, it's not just 10,000 that goes into the sky. This is money that will keep the bus going.
Oh, absolutely.
That will keep the supports going. This is you running your marathon, you're genuinely helping. We don't know how many more people, but you're helping other people in your community. It's a beautiful...
We are actively involved in fundraising, but most of the time, actually, we don't have to do anything. The money actually comes to us. We've got in excess of €10,000 in the last week from just two families, one in Quigley's Point and one in Termon. We didn't have to do anything, only put our hand out and receive the cheque. But we always try and tell people that when they give us money, what are we actually going to do with it? Because you know, the friends, it's not visible. The bus is visible, but the rest of the activity isn't visible. So we always have to reassure people that when we get the money, what we spend it on, because we don't have any paid employees. We have literally no running costs at all. So everything we get or we raise goes straight back into the hospital, as all of Connor's money will do.
Yeah, okay. Now, in terms of what you have to do for preparation for this marathon between now and then, I mean, what else can you do? You've run a half marathon, you can't run another half marathon.
Well, maybe you can. I was meant to go down with the boys to get a kind of Iron Gully for another half marathon. But I've done a lot of that. I really hurt my knees the first half marathon, so I might skip that and just do the full marathon. Just do kind of not the full marathon, but close enough to it again.
Yeah, exactly.
There's always an Ironman competition that you can follow.
Let's not get ahead of ourselves here.
Very good. And Connor, how is your health now?
It's good,
because you mentioned at the beginning that this was inoperable, aggressive cancerous brain tumor.
So because this cancer was around my CNS, central nervous system, and the second time it went up his left cerebellum, so it kind of pushed on that, and that stopped everything working on the right side of my body. From head to toe, couldn't move a single thing, but I could feel everything. And one of the things that's still gets me health wise is my memory. Radiation just ruined my memory. Like, I'll probably forget Paddy's name by the end of this. God love you, Paddy. Sorry. I just can't remember names or some information. I just can't hold anymore.
Yeah, and is the worst part of that the frustration of it?
Even for work. Like, I enjoy work because it kind of gets the memory going. Keeps it kind of stable, but even at work is still not great either.
But that's the new you now.
Well, that's the new me, right?
Your life. But it's remarkable at all that you're sitting here. I mean, we can't overstate that either. Like, it's the miracle marathon man.
Well, let's not get ahead of ourselves here.
Miracle half a marathon man. Right. So, if you want to support Connor. And I just wanted to test that this worked. You just search GoFundMe Friends of Letterkenny, and it pops. It's the first one that comes up. So, and I actually spend Friends if Letterkenny, and it still got me there thanks to the power of Google. So you're just short of 10k, and we hope that you smash through that.
Fingers crossed,
because as you say, this money is already going straight to the Friends of Letterkenny University Hospital. And as you say, Paddy, and it's worth mentioning again. In terms of fundraising, people that have engaged with the service know what it does, know the importance of it. And sadly, often they've gone through their own experience, or positively, actually. I say sadly, but positively they've gone through their own experience. They're the first to sort of start fundraising and do a lot of the heavy lifting in that regard.
Most of it, because as I said, 7 million over the last 30 years. I mean, that's a fair amount of money, and the huge majority of that has been raised within Donegal. We're very lucky too that we have a lot of companies that have sponsored us down the years, both in Letterkenny and further afield, and some of those companies actually have had no involvement with the hospital at all, but they've been very, very generous to us as well.
Brilliant stuff. How are you for shoes and your running gear and all that?
That's all bought, all done. The first thing I've done.
Okay. Would you... I don't know, how long do shoes last? Could you use the same shoes from the half marathon now for the full marathon?
It depends what kind of shoes it is. Some shoes you get 500 kilometres from them, other shoes you get... I bought a pair of shoes that apparently they say you can only use 100, for 100 kilometres. So there'll be the marathon shoes, they're good shoes, like.
Yeah.
But I also don't because I wanted to get the Friends that I can name out there as well. I want people to know about it, because some people don't know about it at all.
I think you're spot on, Connor, because after I had the quick chat with you, it was, Paddy, what's going on behind the name? Because it sounds kind of nice, innocent little name. But it doesn't tell us the whole story. So it's always good to remind people that they provide additional and medical equipment, facilities, services and patient comforts in the hospital, which would not otherwise be available from central funding, to provide transport free of charge to people from Donegal who require radium treatment in St. Luke's Hospital in Dublin. I know all about this from family, and I'm sure everyone else listening does as well, knows how important that is. And to provide volunteers to support and augment ordinary hospital services, both inpatient and outpatient. And then there's the lobbying, the campaigning, and all the other stuff that's hard to fit into a sentence. Paddy, thank you as always. Paddy Rooney, PRO, welcome, Friends of Letterkenny University Hospital. Connor Dorrian, fair play to you.
Thank you.
All right, best luck. So you said at the beginning the marathon's in
Rome.
Okay.
Yeah, so apparently it's
the worst place.
Well, apparently it's for the worst marathon because there's like 8 miles of cobblestones.
Oh, no.
And they're bad for the ankles, so. Oh,
Did you get the memo about your knees? Come on, now. Right, okay. And just Google Friends of Letterkenny University Hospital. And what did I say? I messaged again, yeah. GoFundMe, Friends of Letterkenny University Hospital. Well, Friends of Letterkenny got me there straight away.
Yeah.
So there's no excuses. And if you have a five or a tenner or whatever it is, the money's going straight to Friends of Letterkenny University Hospital. Connor, best of luck. Maybe we can have a chat afterwards.
Perfect.
If that's okay. And Paddy, we'll talk again in the future. And you and everyone involved in that organisation, keep up the great work. Okay, back with more very shortly. Okay, you're very welcome back to the programme. We are in studio with two guests. They are Dr. James McDade, Honorary President of St. Eunan's GEA Club. Good morning to you, Dr. McDade.
Good morning.
How are you getting on? Good
very
to have
well,
you in.
Thank you.
Yes. Haven't seen you up here for a while.
No, I haven't been here for quite a while.
It's good to have you with us. Thank you. Also, John Harran, Chair of St. Eunan's GEA Club.
Good morning, Greg.
Good morning, John. Right, okay. We're talking in the context of St. Eunan's Club officially unveiling the naming of the Dr. James McDade stand at O'Donnell Park. This when Galway come to town this coming Sunday, so it's the day after tomorrow. It's a wonderful honour, all right? And it's wonderful that we're able to have Dr. McDade here to talk about it and to welcome it as well, isn't it? Talk to me about this decision, John.
Well, I suppose, Greg, as a decision going back, I'd say well over 10 years, at a club AGM we had out in O'Donnell Park. I think it was my father actually proposed it, that we name the stand after Dr. James McDade. I suppose that comes around from the fact that when we were doing the redevelopment of O'Donnell Park back in the late 90s, early 2000s, when we started the new development, I suppose the ducks were lined up nicely for us when Dr. McDade became Minister for Sport, and there was a lot of money floating around in the economy at the time, so there was a lot of grants there. So we applied for the grants, which we were entitled to, and we got the two new pitches developed out there. But I suppose where Dr. McDade came along was that he pushed big time for the club to apply for the money to build the stand, because at the end of the day, Greg, we were just a normal GA club, all right, a big GA club in a big town, but we would never have had the money or the investment, you know, to go and build the stand for 2,500 people and 6 dressrooms underneath and all the facilities that it had. So without Dr. James's support at that time, that would never have been built by St. Eunan. So it's fitting that, you know, that proposal was put in place. And I suppose it was a long time ago now, maybe proposed over 10 years ago, but I suppose maybe Dr. James was still in politics and might have been a wee bit, you know, political at the time. So I suppose he
probably is, if the truth be told, still.
Well, yeah,
I don't think you retire from that.
Well, officially, he's out of politics since 2010. So a long time has passed now. And he has become honorary president. So I think now was the right time to just go ahead and do it. So, and as you say, Greg, when he's still alive here with us, is the great part about it.
I didn't know how to phrase that, but it's lovely that we have Dr. McDade still in good health and able to enjoy this honor. And I want to bring James in a moment, but just, you know, when you have ambitions, and we talked the last time about the latest efforts, fundraising efforts and what have you, but you have to have the infrastructure, you have to have the facilities to match ambition and to match growth, can't you? Because one doesn't really work very well without the other.
No, exactly. If you don't have the facility there, you can't sell your product, you can't get the young people out to O'Donnell Park, you know, because we're competing with other sports in the town, so you have to have a good product to sell them. And, you know, the other thing is, if we didn't have that stand, Inter-County Games wouldn't have returned to O'Donnell Park in Letterkenny. I think it was 1972 was the last time we had a game there. And then when we built the new stand and the new pitch, Inter-County Football came back to the O'Donnell Park, which was great for the town and great for the club. And that was, I think, in 2007 when we welcomed Kerry for that first National League game. And you know, we won it. So since then, we've had a National League game every year, and we're thankful to the Donegal County Board. But it's important that they back us too, which they always have, because we are the biggest town in Donegal and we have to promote Gaelic games, and that's very important. So I know some people say we don't have a great record there, but, you know, we've fine facilities, so you can't blame the pitch at for that.
Are you blaming the players, John?
Well, sometimes they haven't performed, but hopefully on Sunday we'll get a good result.
Yeah, indeed. James, before your involvement in politics, and we'll get to where we're at now, you played for Termon. Talk to us about that.
Yeah, it was the Determined Club was formed. My mother, God have mercy on her, was quite involved in that particular thing with Gracie McCafferty from the Lagoon. Well, they were women in it at the time, but yeah, the Determined started off in the 60s, and basically we had a junior club, we had junior there, but we were very, very successful in that year. When on looking back at it, you know, it was a good team, and we went on to win the junior championship, I think, in 1973, after being basically founded maybe just for ten odd years. So yeah, Termin was the club that I played for all of those years up until 1977 when. One thing and another made it more feasible to play with St Union's. That, you know, I was working in the hospital at the time, and basically, you know, managers like to have their players out training on the Tuesday and the Thursday, and that's understandable as I see them. So it's rather difficult when you were basically working a one and two rota to get out to train on a third Tuesday or a Thursday. And so all things being so, we went, you know, I came and I
said, and you played quite. You played into your 40s.
Yeah, I went up into the 40s. All right, yeah, Joe Winston was another one into the 40s. But
you weren't picked, you just turned up into your 40s.
Yes, it was. I mean, as I said, they were quite fortunate on one occasion in 1983, actually, because there was a very, very scarcity on the players on the ground at that time, and we were drawn, as far as I remember, against Kelly Beggs, and they were really looking for players at that stage. So the 16 of us went to Kelly Beggs, and making the long story short, we won that game anyway, just been on, but I was retained on the subs bench or whatever you want. So fortunately enough, I got a senior medal in 1983, which I certainly didn't deserve.
Now, fast forward to the late 90s, and at that point, we weren't faring very well. We often talk about Donegal being forgotten, but we certainly were being forgotten in terms of the allocation of sporting grants. So talk to me a little bit about that, and also what you saw in terms of potential for St Union's.
Well, yes, as I said, okay, I got my ministerial job in 1997, and at that time, you know, everything appeared to be rosy in the garden. Was plenty, you know, that there was plenty of funds there, and Charlie McCreevy was my Minister for Finance, and I was friendly with all of my colleagues at that stage, but I was quite a good friend with Charlie. But at that time, it was an opportunity to spend money on sport, and Charlie McCreevy was of the same thing, that, you know, let's spend money on the sport, and because the facilities are actually not great in any of the counties, but particularly in certain counties, the smaller counties didn't have it. So we put together a thing that we were going to spend quite an amount of money, and we ended up spending that amount of money. I remember the St Union's or the Donegal situation, I was castigated for being too parochial on the issue. If you want to be too parochial, it's not a bad thing for people to be accusing you of when you're in politics. But at the end of the day, you took a look at the funding that was coming into Donegal vis-a-vis other counties. We're like the sixth or the seventh largest populous, most populous.
Well, was it like, I'm the minister now it's our turn?
Well, it was a case of making a case for the Donegal. I mean, we were not next or near the amount of funding that other counties were getting. In other words, I estimated that we were in 17th position with regards to funding being allocated at that time, and we should have been up in the sixth or seventh because of our population.
Yeah, and do you think that same sort of positive discrimination, and you don't apologise for it, and if you don't mind me phrasing it like that, there, can that still happen now, or has the media and political landscape changed where you couldn't?
I think that, you know, a lot of the work has now been done, so the amount of work as and the amount of money that would be funded to it is not the same amount as would be required at that particular time. But there's one thing I found about the giving out the sports grant, which you give out to, you know, clubs and various other different, you know, much different clubs and little training grounds and various other things, was that there was never any complaints. They might have complained about money being given to such when such a thing was necessary, but there was never any complaints about not one block that we actually put into sport. It was always accepted. There might have been a little bit of animosity between the who got it and the one county or whatever. But in general, there was nothing nothing to compare about the situation there. So the money, when we were spending that particular money, it was money well spent. And, you know, the value for money that they got out of it, and I mentioned a few clubs that, you know, the value that they built their grounds out of, Wee Mallon Head up at the very top of the county, was a classic example. So the money was well spent. The people got.
And also, too, obviously, our focus, given Sundays upon us, is on GEA and St Eunan's, but you were looking at soccer grounds, yeah. Soccer clubs, yeah, hockey, got, yes. Golf, rugby. It was... Yeah. There was a lot of money dished out over
there was a lot
years.
Of money dished out. All of those particular sports got money, and even more than you're actually able to say there. But all of those certainly got money over the five year period at that time. And as I said, it was money well spent.
But things aligned well, did they, John Harran, in terms of the ambition of St Eunan's, and then having the right man in the right place at the right time, because you were ready to go, you'd seen where you wanted to go, and then you had someone that could back you and back you financially too.
Exactly. The thing had just come at the right time, because our development committee at the time and people, you know, back there in the club long before me, I was just starting out as a senior player, but, you know, the ambition of them men, Mickey Gibbons might have been chairman, PJ Hoey, Andrew Duffy, Joe Winston, Connie McGuire, Charlie McAtee are still there, Eugene Dowling. I don't want to name names, I'll leave people out. Joe Winston, you
Campbell,
know,
yeah,
Frankie right. Campbell, good friends of Dr. James. You know, great people in the club. Great people in the club. So they had the plans drawn up, and the fundraising had started with the house draws and that there, and then Dr. McDade came along as minister. So it just kind of was the cherry in the top. And as I say, the cherry in the top was definitely, you know, the funds to build that stand. But just going back to what you were saying earlier, Greg, like, we've got a lot of positive response this last couple of weeks since we've announced that the stand will be named after Dr. McDade, from, as you say, GA clubs around the county who, you know, Dr. McDade was very, very generous to, I think, every club in Donegal benefited from the time he was a minister. So they've all made contact, and
James, I don't really know. I don't know you, right? I can't read you, right? So I don't know what this means to you. So I'm going to have to ask you, is it embarrassing? Is it a great honour? What does this all mean to you?
It is a great honour. I mean, when I was heard that it was being proposed and that it had actually gone through the committee, it was kept quiet for a while, from what I can gather. But no, it's a great honour to be recognised by, you know, by sports people, by the people of Letterkenny. As I said, I look back and you take a look at the years, and it suddenly dawned on me, I came here in 1973, you know, and okay, you kept working and so on. But I mean, that's 50 years ago. You know, so I mean, I have everything to be thankful for the people of Donegal. Yes, Donegal people, right in general, because at that stage, as I said, I was working in the hospital. We were doing our work there, and then suddenly it dawned on me, you know, isn't it ironic that they're making this presentation to me, which is a real honour? And you know, I just thought, but you know, this is I'm 50 years here in Donegal. I qualified in 73, 74. I came to Donegal. Normally at that stage, you would have to go, I mean, to do surgery and whatnot. You'd have to go to the States, or you'd have to go to the UK or whatnot. But I came, and just with one, you know, before we were supposed to make that decision, a decision came, and I Paddy Scally gave me a ring one day and, you know, said, what do you think
about
this?
What swung it for you?
Sorry?
What swung it for you?
I think the fact that I was age I was, and I had three children, and it meant that I, you know, you had to put your roots down somewhere. So I was given that opportunity by the people, first of all, by Dr. McMahon and Joe Hanley and them people that gave me the job and wanted me in Letterkenny, and then the fact that you were basically settled there. And then the next thing was, like, the generosity. I ran for politics in 1989, and again I got the full backing. Well, I got backing from where I went, where I needed it. I got number ones, number two, threes, and four at the time of the election, and they were all necessary. And I'm grateful for all those people that actually elected me. I ran in seven elections, as far as I know, and we managed to win them all. You know, we qualified in them all. So no, it's a great honour.
Do you think maybe more important to your family and those around you than it might be to you just at this time?
Say that again, sorry.
Is it perhaps maybe it might mean even more to your family and those around you at this time than it might yourself?
No, it does. I think it would be.
If that makes, do you understand that?
I do.
I know it means a lot to you, but I think it would be nice for them to see.
No, it means a lot to you, but I mean the number of calls that you get on the Facebook and stuff like that there has been phenomenal for this particular.
Great. And John, you were going on to say, I think, that this, obviously we're talking about St. Eunan's here, but there's been support from other clubs as well for this move.
Absolutely, and not only GA clubs, but all sports clubs have made contact, you know, that Dr. McDade, and they're saying, isn't it great that we can honour him when he's still alive? You know, because unfortunately, you know, we do these things after the people have passed and they're not there to you know, to get all the credit. And I know someone told me about Dr. McDade that when he was minister and he was going around opening up sports pitches and places around the country, and he used to say to the people, isn't it a pity the person that it has been named after or the pitch has been opened that they weren't there to see it? So, you know, it is unusual to do it when the person is still alive, but we think it's the right thing to do. As he said himself, he's 50 years. And it's St. Eunan's marking it, but we're kind of marking it on behalf of the people of Donegal and especially Eric Kelly, because his service as a GP to the people of the town, you know, was phenomenal. And, you know,
and the challenge is ever increasing in the area you're working in. I mean, I don't know what you thought you might be doing at this stage, you know, but I imagine it's more challenging now than it has ever been to be a GP. Because I spoke to you previously and you said, you know what, there's other things I could be doing, but if I step away, what happens? Are you still in that space?
Absolutely. I mean, at the minute, really, it is quite a difficult situation that, you know, with the number of patients that are
language having, barriers, presumably?
Sorry?
Language barriers?
Language barriers are particularly difficult. As I said, you know, since the Ukrainian situation and all the number of people from Ukraine that are here, you know, you get an example that, okay, these people don't speak English, so therefore you got to get an interpreter. The interpreter talks to the patient talks back to the interpreter talks to me, I talk back to the interpreter goes to, so, yes, all of those things.
And I imagine there's frustrations come with that as well.
Exactly.
So fill in between the lines as well.
Yeah, okay, and then the time and the day gets longer. Everything.
Yeah. Okay. Right, John.
Yeah, Greg. So just before we go, to give people maybe a quick rundown on what the plan is.
Yeah, good stuff. Go ahead, John.
You know, I think the gates are opening probably around 11:30, maybe 11:00. It's an early kick, an early throw-in at 12:30. So we're hoping to officially have Dr. McDade say cut the ribbon to open the stand around 12:00. So it's going to be before the match, you know, because the teams come out on the pitch and warm up and all that. So we're looking for around the 12:00 mark for them to officially cut the ribbon and unveil the plaque. And I want to just mention that Daly's Memorial out there in Cornwall have kindly done the plaque for us, the Daly family, great supporters of St. Eunan's. So that's hopefully around the 12:00 mark, Greg. So anyone who wants to be there, and there will be a big crowd there for the match, but people who want to pay tribute to Dr. McDade to be in early,
I ask a question that I know will come up? If people have other things on and can't stay for the match, will there be access for the opening and then people can, or do people have to pay in for the match?
It's kind of, yeah. Unfortunately, it is for the match. You know, they'll have to have a ticket to get into the match. Now, afterwards, we're having a bit of a do up in the clubhouse after the match. So that'll be around the 2:00, 2:30 mark. Dr. McDade will be there, all his family and friends. So anyone that can't get to the match who wants to come, you know, they're more than welcome to the clubhouse upstairs afterwards. And just before I go, Greg, finally, there's a funeral out in Drumkeen this morning of a great former St. Eunan's player. He was 86 years of age, the great John Charlie Duffy, and he was out at the wake last night, and lovely memorial there of all his pictures and his medals and his time playing for St. Eunan's. So just to the Duffy family out there in Drumkeen to say that we're thinking of John Charlie, a great St. Eunan's man, and sadly passed away, but he had a great life.
And, and an uncle of our own, Joe Duffy, as well. Okay, so thanks very much for that, John. Dr. James McDade, enjoy Sunday.
Yes, well, thank you very much. A little damper was put on it, of course, because our great friend Michael Sweeney, who played full forward for Donegal in 19, quite a number of times, but one that was Donegal first won the Ulster title in 1972. And Michael was a patient about it as well, but he was found dead in his bed last night at quite a young age. And as I said, it's there's a bit of a mixing thing there with the situation as well. But just to remember that, you know, there's always a kickback of some form.
But we can always honour and remember people, then bring them with us as well too. I get that. But thank you very much, both of you, for that. And we'll chat again. Thank you very much. And congratulations, Dr. James McDade, Honorary President of St. Eunan's GEA Club. And there's going to be a stand named after him, the Dr. James McDade stand. I wonder what it's going to be shortened down to. I don't think we can expect the wider public to... But anyway, hopefully it's a good nickname. It ends up with some shortened version of that. Okay, John Harn, Chair of St. Eunan's GEA Club. Great to have you up again, okay? Thank you very much indeed. All right, bye-bye.